Blog Talk Radio.
To the old me and God, leave him my home. I am afraid for me.
Hello and welcome. Hi, I'm Kay Townsend and welcome to Kay Townsend Live. And we are going to be talking about a lot of topics this evening that we have been finding out about for several years, and then also some pretty new hot topics. We do news, information, and educational issues, global topics, things that you might want to know about and you will want to know about, you do want to know about. And that's what we're going to give you right now. And for you to call in, if you'd like to call in, the number is 326, everyone. Let me see. I'm here. I'm giving you the number. We'll find it in a minute. It's 326. 323-679-0906. So just in case Wayne Gilman is listening in, you know, we're ready to roll here on K-Town Salon. Lots to give you tonight. By the way, you know, just I had to put my glasses on. I was reading Black Enterprise. Anyway, I'm looking at this, and Earl Graves has written, you know, a really interesting article, and he was talking about, they're going to be having a convention. And they're going to be moving the 90th General Convention to Las Vegas. I think that's the Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity that's doing that. And he says here that the decision came in the wake of Arizona's governor, Jan Brewer, signing what is widely considered the nation's toughest immigration law, which also is set to take effect this month. Now, that law means and says that Arizona Senate Bill 1070 allows the police to challenge illegal residency status of any person they suspect is illegally in the United States. Without question, says Earl Graves, Sr., the move makes the rampant racial profiling of Latinos and other minorities, including all black and brown people, inevitable and completely legal. So what does that do? Well, he says that in announcing this decision, the nation's oldest historically black fraternity joined the city of San Francisco, the city of Los Angeles, the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and others in demonstrating their outrage. But as righteous as they believe their cause to be, it could not have been an easy decision to make, given that the convention was mere weeks away. The move represented not only a logistical nightmare, but also a financial one as well, and the fraternity confronted litigation with some contractors. Alpha Phi Alpha General President Herman Skip and Morton Mason estimated the penalties faced at more than $300,000, but they did it anyway. So congratulations to the Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity for, you know, really dealing with this problem and letting people know what is going to be happening. So we're going to be keeping an eye on that. And then I'm reading I'm reading again in Black Enterprise, and lo and behold, Earl Graves Jr., you know, is talking about, you know, something really very dear to all of our hearts, as a matter of fact. They're talking about one of the greatest tragedies in witnessing a talented professional entrepreneur who is about to reach the pinnacle of success cut down in his or her prime Robin. Now, this is because of the fact that usually, even more tragic, is the victim usually winds up being the culprit. Far too many African Americans engage in behavior that proves to be deleterious to their health, rather, and commits them to premature death sentences. Now, he says part of the problem is connected to, are you ready for this? A condition most of us can avoid, or reverse, obesity. This disorder continues to be a weighty issue, and it's literally killing us, morphing into deadly diseases such as type 2 diabetes, stroke, high blood pressure, and breast and colon cancer. So, and also, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, a staggering 45% of African-American adults are obese. And for black women, the statistics are even more alarming. The Department of Health and Human Services, Office of Minority Health, reports that 4 out of 5 black women are either overweight or obese. Okay? And as a result, you know, more African Americans have become twice as likely as whites to be diagnosed with diabetes and 40% more liable to contend with high blood pressure. Moreover, black men have 60% greater probability of dying from a stroke than their white counterparts. So therefore, these are things that we have to really be concerned with. So we have a caller. I think maybe it might be Wayne Gilman, it might be Eric Payne, and it might be Akia, it might be some other persons, but anyway, you are on the air. Hello? You are on the air. Let's see if we can get this call through. You're on the air. The caller is there? Okay, we will try to get that through. But anyway, you know, one other thing I have to say, it really is interesting about, you know, I was looking at television the other day, and I was seeing this, I was seeing Henry Louis Gates, you know, Dr. Gates, Professor Gates, because of the fact that he did. He's the person that has urged us to find their ancestry. Let me see. Is the caller on the line right now? Are you there?
I'm here, Kay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now, Wayne. How are you?
I guess okay. And yourself?
Good.
I was
good.
Getting a little worried. It was beginning to sound like last week.
Well, listen, last week, as you know, we had more rain where I was, and I won't say where we were. It was so unusual. We couldn't get anything through. And lo and behold,
I kept trying.
Yeah, it was because of the weather. And for the first time, the area that I was in, you know, we were experiencing some overflooding, some flooding. So
and
it's
raining again tonight, you know.
Oh, is it? I haven't looked outside in about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was a interesting discussion last week, especially with, you know, Bob Kervin's new book. So, you know, I like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was missing in action. I kept trying and trying, and, you know, eventually I just said, uh-oh, something's going on. But that just goes to show technology with all the advantages and advances that have been made, you know.
Yeah.
Traditional ways of doing things still, you know, reign true. So what can I tell you?
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And I know we didn't. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm interrupting you.
No, go ahead, Wayne.
No, I know that we didn't get a chance to talk at all this week. I've been busy trying to get some business straight here. My landlord hat, of course, you know, and thank God that's coming to an end now so I could really take a break. And well, you know, that's it. I feel like this, I am really, really blessed to have spent 30-some-odd years of my life doing radio and TV because now that I'm doing something that, you know, basically I used to have others do in my absence while I was working, I now realize how much money I wasted. I probably would have been rich by now if I had been taking better care of what I was running as a business. And I've also learned in my old age how important it is to keep it as a business. And, you know, it's no wonder that I still have something, you know. It's just amazing.
Well, as long as you're functioning, you know, that's a plus, isn't it? I mean, you have good health and everything, so.
Don't get me wrong. Health is most important. I just happened to tune in just as you were coming on, and you said something about blood pressure and stroke.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if this Obama healthcare piece has thoroughly been exhausted in terms of improving the communication between hospitals, insurance companies, and things like that. And I'm trying to rectify the problem. I'm not going to call the insurer or, you know, to put ourselves in a libelous situation. But, you know, I've heard so many people complain where they sign up for something and you're paying all this money because it's now the law. You required to pay into a plan. And then when your services are not delivered, and in my case recently, I was supposed to get free coverage just to go in to see my regular practitioner, and now I'm being sent a humongous bill that I refuse to pay for. I would rather do without until I get some notice, and now I see why some people have opted to drop out, because I think not all the insurance companies are in lockstep with what the administration has been attempting to do. And I can't think of one insurance company. I've had a chance to visit a number of insurance companies around the country, and I can't think of one whose office is immaculate, looking like as if it's the Four Seasons Hotel or something like that, compared to the little shack that I live in. Or most people I know out here, you know, trying to get coverage, you know, a lot of them are in fixed incomes and of meager means. And these companies, you know, you pay into them once a month, you know, and it just annoys me that sometimes, and it could be just the person who's doing the clerical situation, but it's just numbing when you have to deal with a certain level of mediocrity and you're paying, you know, and again, I don't mean to belabor the point, but it's just that you pay tremendous sums of money for something that in some places it's given. It's a given that if you lived in Canada or Great Britain or Switzerland or places like that, you know, it's not like as if this is, you know, rocket ship science to figure out. I mean, you don't have to pay you don't have to make decisions between eating a meal 1 week as opposed to paying your insurance.
You know, and it shouldn't be that way, because I know one thing, a lot of people complain about the fact that the language is confusing.
It is.
And there has to be a way that they can get adequate people in their offices to adequately explain it completely to people. If not, they shouldn't hire those people, or either they're not being trained correctly or adequately.
Well,
and also,
there
are loads of deductibles. The $2,500 worth or what?
Well, you know, that's the thing, too. I mean, the deal is that, all right, I just found out over the summer that if you go to an emergency room for an emergency visit, even if it's not quite an emergency, that's considered outside of the system in terms of seeing a regular practitioner, because for a while there, I didn't have one. I would just go to a community clinic, and I was short on blood pressure medication. I have nothing to hide here. You know, there's a reason why I sound the way I do. So the thing is that I was without my medication. So the deal is, I figured, let me go to a local hospital here in New York, and if I walk into an emergency room and say, hey, I feel okay, but I just want to do something preventative. I want to make sure that I have 50 milligrams of X, Y, and Z so I could stay, you know, okay without having to face a stroke. And I went on the advice of somebody, and I did that. And next thing you know, I come back home, you know, 4 weeks later, and I got this bill for $400 just for stopping to see. I said, well, wait a minute. Why am I paying close to $400 monthly, and this isn't covered? You know, I thought once I'm admitted, you got to hit this $2,000 deductible before they start, paying into the plan. And I don't know. I mean, it's almost like organized crime, Kay.
You felt like what?
To me. It's like organized crime.
Oh, okay. So I'm not saying that way, but you are, but that's what it sounds like, really.
Yeah, listen, I'll take the heat for this. You know, this has not been a good year for me in terms of health care.
It's because the language is not only difficult, it is really difficult for people to explain if they're in the medical field. Now, there should be a way of, having people understand exactly what they're talking about when someone calls. Unfortunately, that isn't so. So, you know, you just have to bear with it, and, it's a pain in the neck. And then when it ends up costing you money, that's when you really got to get busy, because this stuff cannot be afforded. That's all it is to it. I hear a lot of people complaining about it, and they are justified in those complaints. So
yeah,
anyway,
I agree. I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry, Craig. Yeah.
No, that's good. Go right ahead. A lot of people are going through this lane.
Yeah, yeah. It's just annoying, and they really need to straighten it out. I don't think it's entirely Obama's fault because, I mean, you know, thank God we at least got to this point. We couldn't do it under Hillary Clinton 10, 15 years ago. But, you know, he was able to marshal this thing through. And, of course, you have the Republican Party always at odds with everything that the administration is trying to do to save the country. But the bottom line is that they really, really, some effort has to be made, part of the business community, to really get this thing well organized, because it's a shame. And it just seems like the only time you get their attention is when you stop making payments.
Well,
if you don't hear from me next week, you know why.
Listen, Wayne, my doctor said don't pay it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just don't pay it, period.
Well, that's
okay?
What my lawyer told me.
But listen, let me just tell you, you know, Cory Booker used to be the mayor of Newark. You know, he's now a senator right here in Jersey.
Yeah.
And I have to give him credit. You know, he is he's going up against a person who hasn't been in, I think he was in politics for a while, I forget his name, and then he came back, and there are a few things that this man, who is a lot older, is, you know, lacking, let's put it that way. And Cory said that, and this is unusual for me to hear from him, he said that blacks are more likely to be arrested and killed than their white counterparts. And then he was talking about that blacks are arrested for minor things versus, you know, white prisoners, okay, or whites.
Mm.
Now, he also talked about Ferguson and a few other things, which I was surprised. So, you know,
well,
he's
now that he's on the national stage.
However, I'm glad that he's coming out with that.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's on the national stage and he's got so much to represent for New Jersey. But I just wish your governor would get his etiquette straight, you know. I mean, I was listening to a news conference today, and he told someone to shut up. I mean, excuse me.
You're
supposed to be the chief executive for the state of New Jersey. You know, where do you get off telling a constituent to shut up?
because he doesn't have any class. Let's face it, you know, he's, especially what he did with this woman that, came back from helping people in Liberia.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, that was so tacky. You know, you can't get over that kind of nonsense. But anyway, the way that he talks to people is amazing, you know?
Yeah.
And still have,
we
still have the George Washington Bridge issue, you know,
that's been buried.
No, not really. Not here in New Jersey. People still thinking about it.
That's good to hear. But the thing is, how do you feel about the whole quarantine situation with, Ebola?
Well, I'll tell you something. If the people from the CDC, if those people are saying that you can only get Ebola by physical contact, meaning or some, you know, remnants of, say, urine or something like that as you're working on somebody. That's the only way it could be, you know, contracted or whatever it is I'm trying to say here. I'm trying to think. But anyway, and I would rather pay attention to those people who have gone through it, you know, through taking care of people and finding out the exact information about it. I think, too, that when this whole thing happened, you know, the media really picked it up and ran with it. You know, so they're scaring people to death. And, of course, you know, there's a whole lot of things with the school system. There are some kids, you know, some black kids, you know, who are the white kids in different schools are saying or calling them names that are like Ebola and so forth. And to the point where they don't want to go, you know, the minority kids don't want to go to school anymore. That's horrible.
It is horrible, yeah. I have heard that, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it, you know, the thing is, it is scary. I mean, I have to admit, I'm a, I was a little taken back by the doctor here in New York who chose to go bowling, eat at his favorite restaurant, self-monitor, you know, go through this whole exercise of self-monitoring, and knowing full well at any time he could have come down with the disease, you know, just by virtue of the fact that he was treating people. And I mean, it's commendable that he did that, you know. And the one thing I will say, I mean, Christy's point sort of like was a clarion call to me in terms of this nurse, because even though she's back in her home state, I think it's Maine or New Hampshire, she's refusing to be quarantined up there too. And, you know, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, if you're exposed to this, I mean, it really needs to be treated from where the source is of the disease is coming from. But, you know, America is like such an open place. It is so easy to infect people and have that thing spread like wildfire.
That's right. But, you know, I understand, too, that they are working on an anti, you know, medicine to not let it go through.
Oh, to fight it?
To fight it. But it's not ready yet. I understand it's going to be taking several months, you know, for it to be get to the point where, you know, you can actually, you know, inject people with it. So with the medicine, with the, you know, the medicine that they're working on. So who knows? But it's really very serious, and it's scary, and it's something that you have to be concerned with and aware of. So who can tell? But what our governor here in New Jersey did to this nurse is like, I don't know. It was only spurring the fear factor, okay?
Yeah.
It's pushing it to the point where people are really, really afraid of this. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't be. Of course we should be.
Right.
But I would really like the real, real information, and I think that has been coming to the people who have gone to Liberia and are fighting it. So, you know, but we remains to be seen, you know? So,
I don't know. I just hope that it's been around for a while. I mean, I've been aware of Ebola for about 10, 15 years now, but I just hope, what you're saying is true, that they come up with a cure quickly. I hope it doesn't take as long as it's taken for them to come up with a cure for cancer and AIDS, you know, and that's what really troubles me, because, you know, this thing could be easily used as urban warfare for some of these, if put in the hands of the wrong people, you know, in terms of spreading something. And, you know, we have enough hysteria going on in this country, and with what we're going through with a lot of these groups around the world, you know, trying to take on the United States for a variety of reasons. So I don't know. I really don't know. It's scary.
You know, just to mention, to change the subject a little bit, Wayne, you know, just to mention a few things going on in Newark, you know, because you haven't been to Newark lately, downtown Newark, but there are places that you are not even going to be recognized with recognizing, because of the way that the city is being built. It is really coming forward. It's fantastic. I mean, there are jazz clubs downtown Newark. There are new buildings going up, some jobs coming in, I understand. I was at an NAACP dinner the other night, and lo and behold, the place was absolutely packed. And I had thought that the NAACP was, you know, an older organization and not too many people were, you know, still involved. Not so.
Right.
I mean, this was down at the Newark Club down there, so it's doing quite well. So, you know, that's one thing.
Yeah, I'd
like
to... I was just going to say, I really got to get out there. I saw a documentary on Military Park and what changes are going on there. I think that would be an excellent location to do a show one day, maybe.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. I know. I understand they're trying to make it into an artsy kind of thing downtown Newark.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yeah, so. But there's a possibility of us being down there at a few different locations. So we are going into a whole new area for K-Town Survive, and I'm really very excited about it. You know? And also, you know, wanted to be talking about William Patterson University. You know, we were talking about their jazz program there, you know, some time ago. And people really should be aware of that, especially people, you know, going into higher education, going into college right now. Those people, those kids who are interested in a jazz program, it's excellent. And also the graphic arts and the all kinds of new things. The Chinese art, graphics and all, so much, so many things. Also, what do you think about the situation that happened out in the Midwest, was it, you know, with this young, not an African-American, but American Indian kid? You know, he was. It was as a result, I understand, of bullying, and his girlfriend. He broke up with his girlfriend, and then one kid that they were talking to happened to say that also there were some racial things, you know, being thrown at him.
I'm not surprised. I mean, I'm not aware of the story, unfortunately, but I mean, the deal is that you hear so many different kinds of situations going on today. You know,
yeah.
That you know, the government, I don't even know if the government, it's probably just the way educators are faced with, you know, added responsibilities, because clearly it's not happening in the homes. You know, there was a time, you know, that your parents would actually, you know, instruct you in how to handle bullying to a certain extent, you know,
yeah,
and things
sure.
like that. It just saddens me when I hear of these poor kids, what they have to go through. And a lot of them very innocently get caught up in unnecessary violence.
Yeah. Anyway, Wayne, so what else do we have to talk about? We have a lot of things to be talking about. By the way, Mayor Rasparaka is doing quite well. Here in Newark, as mayor, of course, we know that this is Amiri and Amina's son, and his father passed, you know, several months ago, and Ras is now the mayor of Newark, so we will see what happens, you know. But
he's been a big advocate about education there.
Yes, he was a principal at one of the high schools for a long period of time, and of course, he was always involved with, you know, the movement because of his dad and because of his mother. So, you know, it's looking pretty good at this particular point. A lot of new things going on downtown Newark, as I was saying, and we're covering a lot of them, so including the, well, I was just mentioning the educational issues. But there's so many things that you have to be aware of, especially, you know, I'm wondering about Newark, because the educational system down there is in such array. You know, no one really knows about the different programs that they have in the different charter schools, and I think that they're going to have to take a very deep look into the charter schools and exactly what they mean and what they are and how they're going to be administered, because Newark public schools are getting a bad rap right now, and I can't help but think that it may be because something is desperately wrong.
Oh, yeah, it has been for some time, Kay. I mean, even in New York City, it's the same situation. I think the reason why the charter schools have become somewhat successful is because of what's happening in the public school arena, and not enough money nor attention is given to change the situation. And, you know, like at least in the city of New York, the mayor has an education department to beat up on if he's not happy with the conditions with the schools. But a lot of these other municipalities, I know in Newark, it's an independent system. In parts of Westchester County here, in Mount Vernon, where we have another problem with public schooling, it's not under the mayor's control. So I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it seems like if it's a situation where the government is deeply involved, there's a greater chance, like what Ross Barak has been doing, he's been speaking out, that more needs to be done in terms of improving the quality of the education in Newark. You know, and it's not to say that charter schools should be forced out of business, but, you know, everyone should be held accountable.
Sure. There needs to be a committee or an appointed a group of people to look at Newark, really. Because for some reason, I hear so many parents really, really complaining. You know, when I was in Newark, I think there was a different quality. We didn't have the separate things that the charter schools so much. I mean, they were just coming into being at that particular point. But, you know, it's not fair to the students to have the students go through certain things. you know, and then
exactly.
you have to look at exactly of what's expected from teachers, educators, and also at the business community, those who have, you know, another stake in this, you know, and the political community. So, you know, we have to really, you know, be very concerned about this. So, but anyway, so much.
Yeah.
By the way, I wanted to really mention to you that I have here a book, and it's by Dr. Ali Al-Rahman. You remember Ali?
I remember him well.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, I had read his book partially, you know, and, you know, if he hears this, he's going to say, what, you didn't read it through and through? But he talks about, you know, the what happened when, you know, he became the president of the Guardians, you know, because of the fact that they were the police people in Newark, the black policemen, you know, they're really getting a hard time. And then when he became the president of the Guardians, he was able to, you know, get them some, you know, some interest from, gather some interest from the rest of the community to really be on the side of the police and to really understand what they were going through. And lo and behold, he does mention LIB. He just does mention a few people at LIB, and I'm not going to mention their names and give them credit. They don't give me credit. but people who talked about them. You know, and he says, and Kay Thompson gave us our own segment, and that was true, and that was the name of that was Police Report, and he really says
right.
so forth, and he talks about a few other folks, but you know, and he said that's the way that he became the head of the Guardians, and that's the way they gained the, you know, the favor of the community. Because they just weren't getting a fair rap. I mean, people weren't really taking them seriously, or the other police persons weren't taking them seriously. And of course, he mentions a lot of names that you and I probably remember, and I'm not going to go through their names, but it was after, because he was one of the main people when David Dinkins became mayor. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Guardians, and then the Grand Council of Guardians, they were Dinkins' protection, you know, since he announced he was running for mayor. And each Guardian organization had assignments at campaign headquarters with the candidate. And he was the chairman of the Grand Council, meaning Ali Al-Rahman, Dr. Ali Al-Rahman. And he was in charge of making a schedule and coordinating it with Jim Bell, Dinkins' campaign security chief. And
yeah, I remember Jim Bell.
Yeah, you remember him. Yeah. So things went smoothly, and then he was saying that the Guardians had been involved in every major black historic event since the March on Washington. And he said he had with the I Have a Dream speech, you know. And then he said that the Guardians were with the Bronx County District. You remember Attorney Robert J. L. Johnson in his historic run for the first black district attorney in New York State.
Right, up in the Bronx.
Yeah. So they really became, you know, quite an organization to be respected. They were respected by the black community, but certainly not the white community. So when they got this, you know, this all this press, this positive press thanks for us over there at WLIB, you know, people started understanding that they had somebody or some organization to go to. So you have something to add to that?
Well, I just want to say, I mean, as you mentioned his name and mentioned the book, I'm reminded of a piece that someone emailed me earlier this week regarding, and again, this is not the segue out of it because it all is related in many ways, the death of black information radio, how, you know, shows like yours and what you did to inform people. And, you know, what we did as a collective group, I mean, not to, sometimes I don't like to dwell so much on the past, but you have to look at the level of work and the volume of work that was done and completed, businesses that we started, information that people were getting on a daily basis that just does not exist anymore. And someone did a piece for one of the online publications and sent it to me. And it was regard not just with inner city broadcasting, but, you know, they talked about Kiss FM and the contribution people like Bob Slade and others, Bill Pickett, and, you know, who've been out there for a while, you know, doing things just to keep the community informed. And, you know, the author of the piece basically was given the impression that white America deliberately has come up with this concept to keep a vacuum in terms of information because they're afraid of what it is that we would be doing with the information that we were getting on a regular basis today. You know, if those organizations were still in existence, giving out the information that it does. You know, I mean, we're just a small microcosm on the internet, and as internet radio becomes popular, you know, more and more people will tune in for this information, not just our show, but other shows of like mind and concept. But the bottom line is, you know, in that little 30-year period of time, there was so much development. You talk about the Guardians, and I remember distinctly how Rudolph Giuliani would stage a demonstration at City Hall to basically embarrass David Dinkins with 5,000 cops, mostly whites, just to harass what was going on with regard to having some sort of evenness or fairness in the Dinkins administration. You know, Giuliani had an agenda. This is before he became mayor. And then once, you know, he was able to cultivate a certain amount of political prowess doing what he was doing, then he decided to run for office and take advantage. And it's just unfortunate because, you know, you were there, Kay. I mean, that race could have gone either way. I think it was only no more than 50,000 votes. And I could understand why David Dinkins and his frustration at the end of that first term would act the way he did because, you know, you didn't get a fair shake in the press. And then you have this conservative element out there beating up on you, you know. And after, you can't help but take it personally after a while. So, it's things like that, you know, I look back at and I just say to myself, you know, it's unfortunate, but I remember when even BLS first started, you know, the things that Frankie would do innovatively in terms of our programming just to give a certain measure of quality to black music and just promoting the whole concept of having a progressive state, an image that just probably didn't exist prior to that. You know, I'm not saying that there were, you know, we went through the whole civil rights period, but, you know, there was a certain growth that we went through in the 70s, and I attribute it, because I lived it, I was there, I watched it grow, you know, and
well,
I attribute it to...
I have to tell you, you were the news director there at WIBB.
But I was only 15 years, that's true. Yeah, but I mean, that was only 15 years out of my tenure there. I mean, prior to that, I was out covering stories for the company, but I saw, you know, things that just did not exist before. And I remember there was a time when you couldn't even get operations and manufacturers like Ivory Soap to buy time on a black station because they had this, Madison Avenue had this prevailing sentiment that black people didn't wash, they didn't use soap, you know? And there's so many things that we still suffer from today. I was listening to a commentary on the radio this afternoon. A white broadcaster in the Midwest was doing a commentary about how Charles Barkley, the former basketball player, was critiquing black athletes who criticize successful black athletes who have this perception of sounding white. Now, I've heard that time and again, you know, because if you have an education, you know, you shouldn't sound like a Kay Thompson. You have to sound like as if you come from the hood, you know. And the deal is, well, the white commentator said, well, I don't know what it's like to have to, you know, place the onus on a black youth because he's not black. But he said, you know, he was criticizing Barkley, saying that, you know, by someone trying to sound white should not be considered the paragon of education or equality, because look how many mistakes white people make every day, you know? And I had to stop there and think about it. I said, yeah, you know, we're too busy criticizing each other. And I'm just saying, you know, we go off to wars, a white man's decision. You know, we do different things, you know, predicated on what someone white has decided to do. I mean, I know this guy did this as political satire, but when you read between the lines what goes on, I mean, should being white be considered a paragon? I mean, that shouldn't be, you know, in my opinion. But it's just one of those things. I mean, you know, Aliyah Rahman, I mean, that period, you know, it's just, to me, it's so important what has happened. And only until people realize what we've come to as a result of efforts like yourself, him, Rahman, and others, you know, that you realize that there's been a tremendous amount of growth, but there's also been a lot of ignorance from those who did not go through the struggle and just, you know, basically took it for granted that this growth came out of nowhere and it was always this way, and it wasn't, you know?
Mm-hmm. Look, I know so. Also, you know, just let me tell people the name of Aliyah Rahman's book. The name of his book is We Learn by Trial by Dr. Aliyah Rahman. And he also was, I think the captain at Rikers Island, you know?
Right.
And I remember him here, and he was saying, in his book, I was looking for this, he says on the Kay Thompson show on WRV Radio, I said, meaning him, Aliyah Rahman, said, you mean to tell me out of 259 black captains of the Department of Correction, you can't find one to work investigations? Captains investigate every day. Something like that. I mean, I'm probably, putting the wrong commas, whatever. But also he mentions Bob Tigg over Channel 4. He said he had also interviewed Aliyah Rahman. This is Aliyah Rahman saying that Bob Tigg at Channel 4 did an interview with him that ran for two nights. And the interview opened up the door to black reporters, you know, in newsprint. You know,
right.
And then he says he was invited. After all this, he was invited to Gus Hennenberg's Positively Black on NBC, Kay Thompson of WLIB, and I gave them a permanent segment called Police Report on Monday evenings. And then he also says at WLIB he met the news director Wayne Gilman and reporter Dominic Carter. And you know, listen, and I was amazed that I was able to, you know, say. You know, two of the people in charge there that, you know, I want to separate my shows into different segments. That's how I became up with Children's Forum. If you remember how hysterical that was, because the little kids would call in. But at the same time, I said, no, I want to do a police report, because, you know, people were really getting a bad rap. They would call about some nasty police in Brooklyn and sometimes in Harlem, and they would have no, you know, way to complain. So we started putting them on the air. Remember that? And I was surprised to say, actually, let me do that. I don't think they took me seriously, but it became a success, you know?
But it was successful. I mean, and so many people were informed as a result of it.
Yeah. I think I probably should have been a little more afraid of what could have possibly happened with the white cops, but I don't know. Didn't happen. And they also mentioned RL. He also mentions WWRL. They gave him a platform also with, you know, Del Shield and Donna Wilson, who's my buddy.
Yeah.
And they even broadcast two shows. Oh, yeah, Don and Del also broadcast two shows from Rikers Island.
Wow.
and Wayne, listen, I think I mentioned last week, I don't know if you heard, but I mentioned that we were in a boat one time, you know, several times, and we would go up the Hudson River or along the Hudson River and pass Rikers Island, and that was one of the most foreboding places I had ever seen.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I've never I've only gone once, but I didn't go up the river. I can imagine what that must look like, because on one side you have the Bronx, a very industrial and impoverished section of the Bronx that you could see, and then you got the Rikers Island right there. And some of the most dangerous body of water in the tri-state area is right in that mm-hmm. section. I forgot what they call that, but it's where the East River merges with Long Island Sound. But, you know, at one point, the Giuliani administration, with their infinite wisdom, decided to put some of the prisoners on an old ferry boat to sit out there because I guess Rikers
boat.
Was busting it. Yeah, that's scary.
Gus pointed it out to me. And I said, well, where are the people? And he said, they're out there. And I said, I've never seen anything like it. So I got quite an education when we were out on the water, you know. So,
imagine.
Anyway, I'm so glad that Ali Al Rockman and, you know, the Guardians, the police guys were there, because I think they gave some credit of credibility to people in the Black community, and they gave them some measure of relief that, yes, there was an organization involved with the police department, with the Black policemen who were there to protect them.
Exactly. Yeah. I no, you're absolutely right. I mean, the thing is that I don't hear as much about them today as I used to. I mean, of course, every 2 seconds when there's a soundbite, you know, it's always the president of the PBA beating up on Al Sharpton and the mayor because of their political point of view. But the deal is, I know that they're still actively out there. And it's tragic. I mean, you mentioned a couple of names, Jim Bell, Bob Teague. They're no longer with us. And, you know, it just saddens me that we had so many warriors, you know, at the time who really, really drove a lot of what we were doing home in terms of trying to, you know, get an equal shake for the Black community. And, you know, it's just I'm not saying that their history is lost, but it's just amazing that, you know, all of a sudden you're silenced, and I can't help but feel like, based on what that article said on the internet this week, that you can't help but feel there's an agenda just to keep that information in a vacuum, that we won't be as powerful or just make the struggle even harder for us to gain a certain measure of equality, you know. But
I would like to hear of another show on someone's station giving credit and giving airtime, you know, to the Black police persons, male and female, because they really work hard, and they sometimes are the object of a lot of, you know, internal stuff that I've been reading about and knew about, you know, when we were doing police report on WLIB. And then also, you know, another thing that Ali says is that Ali Al Rockman says, is that through the Biggs administration, they were able to meet the just-released icon of South African resistance, the Honorable Nelson Mandela. And he said it was an honor for him to coordinate with Jim Bell the security force's first visit to New York City. Remember that?
I remember that well.
Yeah, we all had to be down at Police Plaza. And I was thrilled, you know,
Yeah, and he, I'll never forget, I was out there with Dominic Carter and at Boys and Girls High School, which is now Nelson Mandela High School in Brooklyn, you know. It was such a historic moment, you know.
Yeah.
It really was.
And remember when Mandela got to Harlem, and I had an experience with, you know, we were down there when he got there, and we had a, and we were able to get to the, not really close to the platform, but, you know, in the press area right there. And I remember that, you know, it was getting to be dusk. You know, it was getting to be a little dark and whatnot. And then all of a sudden there was a light on you know, Nelson Mandela. And I thought, well, wow, I thought there was a spotlight. You know, look at that. I wonder who's, you know, putting this light on him. And it wasn't a spotlight. It was as soon as he got up on that. As soon as he got up on that stand, the sun came out because it was getting to be dusk, but the sun shone right there, and that was absolutely incredible.
Wow.
So I remember that, because a few people mentioned, they said, look at that. I said, boy, oh boy.
Yeah, well, you know, he was godlike. I mean, I tell you, he could walk on water.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's just unfortunate. Yeah. Those, you know, heroes of that era, you know, they're no longer with us. It seems like every era has their own, you know, that you can talk about. And I'm just glad to have been a part of at least history to see what was going on, because you don't really hear much about that today anymore, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The world has changed considerably. I don't know. I mean, to me, it's just as volatile as it was then, but, you know, probably even more volatile now.
Yeah. There's a whole lot going on. You know, just to give Ali Arbuckman's book, you know, this is something, because he really talks about when he became the, head of Rikers. I forget what the title exactly was. We're trying to find it in the book right now. But, you know, he was talking about the different problems that the women had, you know, and there were things I was going to read, but I can't find it right now. So we're coming to the close of the show in just about a few minutes anyway. But it's really it's fascinating. And I have to tell people, this is a book that you should get. If you're going to be doing something on, you know, police in New York City, and especially the African-American police persons, you know, and what they meant to the city and what they meant to the community, especially the Black and Latino communities, because they felt that they really had a voice, you know, with the coming of them on WLMB, because people weren't even paying that much attention to them. But as soon as they, you know, got on LIB, then you know, they really were, you know, being paid attention to it. I thank them for the Guardians for giving me a couple of words there. I don't know if they were justified, but, you know. So. But I'm trying to get in touch with Ali Arbuckman, because I would like to talk to him, you know, on the show, and I know that you would too, and so would Eric. And you know, so
yeah, it would be great if we could track him down. I mean, we're losing so many of our heroes. You know, I just hope it's not a situation where he's no longer with us. I got a call early this week from a friend of mine in Baltimore who told me about, actually, there's some gala event happening in Newark this weekend involving your good friend Adrian Council and his magazine. You know, I wish them well. I don't know. I sent you an email, but I had heard there's some big event somewhere at New Jersey PAC, I think, this Saturday or something.
You know, I really haven't been paying attention, you know, within the last, I think it's a gala. Isn't it a gala? I'm asking my daughter.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I don't know if it's the anniversary party or what, but I know I was told about it. I just didn't, you know, I was not aware until this gentleman told me, and at the same time when he was telling me about this event for the magazine, I was so sad.
Oh, but you're talking about New Jersey Performing Arts Center gala, I think.
I understand, but I think it's supposed to be this Saturday, and it's for the magazine. I think it's an anniversary party or something. I'm not sure.
Oh, really? As soon as I get off this phone, I'm going to wait until tomorrow, and I'll call you to call Gene and find out about it.
Because, I mean, I was surprised that, you know, that, word of it got as far south as Maryland, you know, and I'm just hearing it for the first time, you know, that evening. But I was also shocked to hear, and I'm sorry I missed this, but I don't know if you remember Pamela A. Hall. Kay, she used to be the music director for WBLS years ago. This is even during the period between the two or three eras in which Frankie Crocker appeared. But she actually worked under Hal Jackson, and Pamela was a young woman who came to the station from Washington, D.C. She had worked at WHUR down there at Howard University. She was also involved with BET. A beautiful, one of the most attractive women I've ever met in my life. And I was so shocked to hear that she had passed earlier this year. She had cancer, kept it a secret. And, I mean, when I heard about it, I was, like, numbed. And I just want to express my condolence to her family. Her father's a prominent Dr. Hall, Brian Hall. He's a prominent gynecologist in Washington, D.C., delivered a number of children to friends and family members at Walter Reed Hospital. Her mother and Mr. Silva, she's from Suriname. Part of her family's from Suriname. And even now as I speak to you about it, I just can't believe that she's gone. But good lady, great loss, and, you know, I just know she must be programming up in heaven somewhere. You know, she was a good person, so I was just saddened to hear that. But not to bring a pall on, but, you know, I just think a lot of people who worked in, you know, in the regime who just didn't get the recognition that they should have, you know, certainly deserve it, and that's it. So just sad. But life goes on. Yeah.
At 50. That's
too bad. 50 years of age, you know, so.
Wow, that's really unfortunate.
By
the way, Wayne, we're setting up new programming, you know, because of the fact that it's you know, we're going to be doing a whole lot of new, as you may know, as you may have heard, but we're not going to be putting that on the air just yet because there's going to be some fantastic stuff that we're able to arrange, and we're making a little slight announcement of that now. So we will be making a big announcement of it. So I want to say congratulations over there to Positive Community Magazine, to Adrian Council and Jean Nash. They're really doing quite a good job over there. It's really great.
Yeah. I was surprised, you know. So I figured I knew if anyone I knew who would have a ticket to this event, it would be UK. So, you know. Yeah.
Listen, I have to say, you know, I put down here Bill Pickett's name and Bob Flay because when they were on the show when we first started the internet show, and I had to tell Bill Pickett that I said, your great-grandfather was Wild Bill Pickett. And he said, yeah, how did you know that? I said, because I read black history. You know, his grandfather was known as quite a calf wrestler. You know, he was a cowboy. He was Bill Pickett, you know, and he invented a thing where you do calf roping. And you try three legs of the calf, and, you know, if you win, it was a timed event. So if you win, then you are a calf roper. And you know, because they do have these rodeos all around, you know, because there was a black rodeo that came to Madison Square Garden some years ago. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. I was just wondering if they still do things like that anymore.
Yes.
Because they were very... it was like an education, really, just to watch people, how they handle the livestock and stuff like that.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, there's a new camp for kids. I forget exactly where it is that this lady has. And she has introduced, kids who are having a little difficulty to riding horses and taking care of animals. And I think it's absolutely great. You know, because what happens is that everything is improved. You know, when people care for animals, especially horses, you know, I was going to say bears, but I don't believe in that. But I have to mention the Turtleback Zoo here in New Jersey in West Orange. And I want to tell all the people, if you want to take your kids to a very educational thing and a wonderful thing, gotta go, Wayne. That's a great thing for them to have the kids visit. Talk to you later. K. Thompson.
Okay, you
thanks,
too.
Wayne.
It's been a great
All right.
show.
All
Thanks. Right. Take care.
Bye. K. Thompson on. Join us again next week.
I'm taking my freedom, blowing it all down, putting it all down, and it's right now, I'm taking my freedom,
Right.